free, commercial-free, community-based radio. We're a little slice of that community-based. We're socialist alternative radio, and we're here every other Sunday from, excuse me, just doing something here that's not really working. Oh, great. We're here every other Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. My name is Jeff, and my guest hosts today are... Louder, Justin.
Hi, my name's Justin.
Okay, and I'm not even sure your mic is up, so try that again. One more time.
Hi, my name's Justin.
Brilliant. And?
My name is Matthew Lajeunesse, and I'm a comrade of Jeff's.
Yes, Matthew's in Social Alternative like me, and Matthew has some radio experience. Justin is my son. Hi. First time on the radio. Now you're immortalized forever. It goes into the stars. Justin's 11. What else can we say about Justin? And he's excited to be on radio. Yeah, you're young.
Oh, now, as if I'm old.
So you got mic two. You got mic four, right, Justin?
Yeah.
Okay. We're all set. Okay. And if you're tuning into the show for the first time, this is Socialist Alternative Radio. Our description is talk and music from a working class democratic socialist perspective. And that basically sums it up. We are going to give you information about what's going on through a much different lens, a much different outlook than you're used to on commercial corporate radio or even progressive radio. We are unabashedly pro-socialist, pro-union, pro a lot of progressive things, but in a way that I think transcends just simple reforms and band-aid solutions. We are for democratic socialism. We're for a transformation of society from capitalism to a socialist economy and all the things that would flow from that, not just here in the U.S., but internationally as well. And we are actually active in that movement, Socialist Alternative. Justin's not, but he's here to... We're going to ask him questions. He's going to ask questions, hopefully. And
I hope I have the right answers.
Yeah, there are. Sometimes there's no right answer. Sometimes things are... For this moment, it's the correct answer, but things change. We'll see. So, and that sounded like a dad lecturing his son. I apologize. So we are going to talk today specifically about all sorts of things. This show, we go on tangents on purpose and talk about all sorts of things. We're going to talk about some interesting polling data that asks if the U.S. is really conservative or not. We're going to talk about Trump care or the lack of it, thank goodness, because he was just... Trump care is a... As you, if you're from the U.S., we do have international listeners, but if you're from the U.S., you know Trump Care is shorthand for the Trump administration's and the Republicans' attempts to destroy what little tiny bit of federal health care we have through the ACA, or formerly known as Obamacare. So Trump Care is really just an attack on existing health care and replacing it with something more profitable even than the existing, very, very profitable ACA. For big business, but Trump care seems dead in the water for now. We'll talk about that. Then we have other things to talk about, like how outrageous it is that CEOs are making 937% compared to workers' wages. And we'll talk about how Seattle has just passed a law taxing the rich, which hasn't gone into effect yet, but it's an attempt to do that. Seattle's affordable housing with socialist alternatives. Sitting city councilor Shama Sawant, who's been elected and reelected twice as an open socialist to Seattle City Council. We'll talk about the $15 victory in Minneapolis, which we have talked about before. We'll go into that a little more. And the Democratic Party and et cetera, et cetera, if we have time. Matthew, again, feel free to bring up stuff if off that list. This is not a script. We don't do scripts here. We just do what occurs to us, what we think makes sense. And again, welcome to the show if you're a first-time listener. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Socialist Alternative Radio. So why don't we get going here. Justin, you know, feel free to chime in. You're already looking bored a little bit.
I'm not bored. I'm just nervous.
Don't be nervous. Radio is the easiest thing in the world. People don't understand that. For some reason, people get that. Well, I mean, what do you think, Matthew? You've done radio.
I mean, it's pretty easy to be the talking person. We're having trouble reprogramming the board so we can play music, so it's not... I wouldn't say it's the easiest.
Technically, radio is difficult. I will admit that. For me. For me. But when it comes to content and speaking and so on, I think it's pretty easy, but I know not everyone thinks that. I shouldn't say that for everyone. But anyway, the thing is, if we stop talking, you get dead air.
No. want that.
And people don't like that. They tend to switch the dial or whatever. Or yeah. Anyway, so before we get into the Trumpocare, Justin and I were talking about, like, what can we talk about on the radio? And one thing that Justin has gone through that I went through, and it's one of the things that kind of made me a socialist in a very indirect way, is you get taught things a certain way in school, and then you find out later they were completely wrong. So Justin's of that age, he's 11, where they're starting to introduce, who knows why, basically, in some ways, Greek civilization.
Oh, boy.
And this is put to you as the cradle of democracy and all that. Now, what's a little fact they left out, Justin?
They didn't talk about slavery. Mm-hmm. And when I brought it up, they talked about it for a second and then tried to, like, deny it. Like, they tried to change the subject really quickly.
Greek society was based on slavery.
Yep.
99.9% of labor happening was slaves. And so all that cradle of democracy stuff, it's got a tiny grain of truth in it. Some people started to abstractly talk about democracy, and a certain elite in society, slave owners basically, had some decision-making power. But that was just, that's absurd to call that democracy, in my opinion. That's, you have to really think about that, about a new term for that.
Well, Greece is an interesting example, too, just because it was such a decentralized mess of a bunch of city-states with different ideologies as well.
Well, I think they all had the same basic economic system, if I'm not mistaken, which was slave-based. Also, Roman civilization, quote-unquote, Egypt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and on into the slavery that people have heard a little bit about, at least into the 19th centuries, used throughout the world by the colonial powers. So it's like, wait a minute, that's a big frickin' fact, you know? And what's worse is it gets even hidden more when you're an adult. Like, I went to Portugal, where there's a bigger left, and I expected when I went to this museum, it was called the Gulbenkian Museum, it's fairly well known, to see this very well-preserved Roman ruins. Like, you still see the color in the tiles. Mommy and I went to this. You weren't born yet. So we went to this, and I was expecting in the explanation of, like, Greek coins and little things, they would have some sort of mention of slavery. Not one mention of slavery. They tried to make the coin sound like equivalent of the monetary system under capitalism, which it wasn't at all.
No.
And stuff like that. So that will continue your whole life. You have to have critical faculties. Marxism and socialism is very good at having a critical awareness of things and using facts and things to see what patterns are happening and what's the reality of the way things are made that people need, and the way people are forced to act accordingly or not forced, or if they rebel or whatever, to put it some of Marxism very, very simply.
Well, wait for him to start learning about socialism in school too, right? Because that was actually...
Wait till you hear all the slanders.
Well, and it was interesting when I started learning about socialism in high school and all those other instances, because they first start teaching you about socialism and they bring up this guy, his name is Karl Marx, and they talk about the Communist Manifesto briefly, and they go over, okay, so the ideals are equality, equal wages, you know, workers for workers and all that stuff, and it's like, okay, this sounds really cool. And then they kind of let it die down for a little bit, and then they talk about the Russian Revolution, and they're like, here's Marxism in practice, and Stalin was this terrible guy, and here's what happened. So clearly socialism is just a complete failure.
Yeah.
And you start saying to yourself, well, wait a second. A few chapters ago, we were talking about equality and worker-run states. Stalin sounds like a dictator and a bureaucrat. Those two things don't line up.
Yep.
So it's, you have to have a critical eye going into your own education.
Yeah, and exactly. The textbooks, like, they can have so many things. And I remember for Greece, going back to that, there was this page that we skipped, and on that page was slavery.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, we just skipped that page.
It's too bad.
I still read it, though.
Good.
And it was pretty good, but...
Well, that's the thing. Well, in terms of what Matthew was saying, that oftentimes what are mass social movements with wars and revolutions and people struggling to survive and economic systems, it's reduced to the word experiment. Mm-hmm. Socialism was an experiment. No. Socialism was something that existed for real. And the minute it came into existence in Russia in 1917, it was viciously attacked by the capitalist countries. 19 countries invaded Russia to try to smash socialism, to prop up what was left of the old regime, which was a czarist, capitalist, feudal regime. And they did everything they could, economic embargo, invasion, propaganda like you wouldn't believe, 10 times worse than what Matthew described, to just try to crush socialism. And they didn't manage to crush it at first, but they did manage to mutate it. They did manage to warp it. And that turned into Stalinism. But you're not going to get that story in school, unfortunately. I mean, it was odd. When I was a kid, I was able to find books about anarchism in my school library. I'm not kidding. I don't know if schools even have libraries anymore, but in my school library, I found more books about anarchism. I found nothing about socialism, really. I imagine a teacher must have mentioned it somewhere, but we never studied it. I know other people have. Like, I had a friend who had a radical teacher in like junior high or high school, and this guy really went into socialism. And this is in New Jersey, in the middle of nowhere. And that was good for her. That introduced her to socialism. But I never had that experience. So, it wasn't really until like college, really, freshman year in college, a philosophy teacher with the same qualifiers you mentioned, Matthew, gave us the Communist Manifesto to read, and it blew my freaking mind. And it, no matter what kind of propaganda they threw in against it, it stood out above the propaganda as something interesting at least, and profound at best, you know. And I never stopped after that checking out socialism in one way or another. But really, that was late to the game, coming from a working class family, you know, working class neighborhood. Why do I have to wait till college to hear about socialism, you know? And at the same time, I was going to college my senior year in high school, I started listening to The Clash. They kind of mentioned it somewhat, but it didn't really register. And then I go to college, boom. So it's really, we've made this point on the show before, it's really haphazard how Americans run into socialist ideas. In the past, it has been. That's changing a little bit. Socialism is getting a lot more popular now in whatever variety, however people are defining it. And that's a good thing overall. And perhaps it will be less accidental. I mean, this socialist alternative didn't exist. You couldn't get in touch with socialist alternative in the past. I mean, we have... by the way, if you want to get in touch with Socialist Alternative and get involved in the struggle to change society, you can go to info@socialistalternative.org. You can go to Facebook, Socialist Alternative USA. There's a Twitter, @SocialistAlt. Here in New England, in Boston, you can call 910-639-3948. Worcester, call 617-285-9346. The person that's a Boston number. We have two branches in Worcester. We'll be talking about the Worcester organizer hopefully later, etc. A lot of ways to get in touch with Social Alternative. A lot of ways to go to socialalternative.org, the website nationally. And that's what I started to say earlier about when I was introducing the show. We're not just here to give you alternative news and information from a socialist viewpoint, which is great, good enough, working class socialist viewpoint. But we go beyond that, and we want people to get involved in Socialist Alternative, get involved in the socialist movement, get involved in changing things. Now, if you're just tuning in, we're here with myself, Jeff, my son, Justin, who's 11, and Matthew. You didn't say your age, Matthew.
Oh, goodness.
That's okay.
I'm 23 years old.
You don't have to. Matthew's from Worcester. And about to leave for grad school in Vermont, right?
Yes,
we're
gonna
miss you terribly.
I know. I'm gonna miss you guys terribly.
But you should come back on vacations and just pretend
absolutely.
Like you weren't away and come to meetings and stuff, and it'll be good. And maybe you get something going in Vermont. Who knows? Are you out in the middle of all of Vermont's kind of in the middle of nowhere, even Burlington. I'm not insulting Vermont, but I've been to Burlington and it's not that many people.
No, in fact, I'm gonna be in Brattleboro, which is southern.
I'm not
part.
Bad. That's not
yeah,
bad. I've been there.
It's about a 2-hour drive. It's not far at all, but it's far away from Montpelier and Burlington.
Yeah. I've been to Brattleboro a long time ago when it was first, I think, getting sort of gentrified in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was impressive in terms of, still small, but like they had some stuff you could do and schools there, at least one school I remember.
Why is Vermont so like underpopulated?
Great question. Mm. For a long time, it didn't have any industries, mostly farming. And then when it got industry in, it just wasn't huge. It was like a lot of, I believe, quarry type stuff and extractive industry, and just it's a relatively small state in terms of its boundaries. So if you want to be like Vermont per se, it never got developed that much.
Mm-hmm.
And then when farming became less, you couldn't survive doing farming. You had a lot of abandoned land and stuff. And I don't know, it's not that close to a big urban center. Like Burlington, the capital is a big city, but it's relatively small.
Burlington's biggest city, Montpelier, is the capital.
Yeah, right. And so I don't know. That's basically why there's this thing about capitalism. It's not planned.
No.
So there's no planning, and you would say, well, in a decent society, you'd want underpopulated areas would maybe need more services and more things, and then maybe they're suited for building certain things there, and we would build them there. That's not what happens under capitalism. It's like, can I make money there? Capitalists are like, yeah, big business. Can I make money there? I'm going to go make money there. And if I don't get my money right away, I'm out of there. You know, there's a really interesting movie called A River Runs Through It or something like that, made by Vermonters, a Vermont filmmaker. And yeah, it wasn't very well known. It was kind of an artsy movie in the 80s with actors that aren't that well known, but somewhat well known. No, I'm not trying to trash it. It was a really interesting movie. And basically, it was kind of about that. It was kind of like a logging company was coming in, driving out a smaller, like, independent logger. And that's kind of what's the basis of the movie. And successfully doing it, basically. You know? Right. And that would be Vermont. Like, logging would be another industry that did happen up there. But, you know, it didn't create a stable industry for a long time that a lot of people could make a living out of.
Yeah.
You know? Right now, Vermont is trying to be more like, come to the schools we have, like Matthew, for example. Yeah. Or like to try to entice new industry to come in, that would be like maybe high tech or whatever. And I'm not sure how successful that is. Like I said, capitalism is unplanned. They can't make a big profit. Vermont's kind of out of the way for them. Although I kind of like the geography of Vermont in the sense that it's like near Montreal, near Boston somewhat, near New York somewhat. I mean, if we had, again, we were talking off air about high speed rail. Yep. If we had high speed rail, Vermont would probably be developed a lot more. It's a beautiful, beautiful state because they get a lot of rain and it's very green. It's called the Green Mountain State or something like that. It's really cool. What were we saying about high? Oh yeah, Justin asked a question off air. We'll bring on air because out of the mouths of babes comes wisdom often. What was the question? Why is there no high speed rail? Was that
Yeah, that was a question. Why is there no high speed rail
in the U.S.? America. Yeah, in America. That's a great question. So America. By the way, Justin, a little digression here before I ask the question. People might think, oh, Justin's dad is this guy, Jeff, who's on the radio with Social Alternative. He's a member, blah, blah, and I must always be talking about politics. Actually, I'm not. not because I didn't want to, but just because the way it worked out, I kind of, would talk about politics in ways I thought Justin could understand when he was younger. I wouldn't use a lot of jargon. I'd say Richie Riches, right? Remember that? They still say Richie Riches for the capitalists, the rich. Okay. And stuff like that. But sometimes I have to go to meetings and stuff, so it comes up. So I'm going to Social Alternative. Oh, what's that? What's the meeting about? Blah, blah. So, you know, it comes up a lot. But as you go to school now, there's no, it just has to come up. But anyway, so the trains. Okay. So at one point, the U.S., before cars got really developed, there was a huge train system in the U.S. and a huge trolley system. You can still see skeleton aspects of it in places like Boston where the roads are wider. Why is that road so wide? Oh, you used to have trolleys going down it. Or you can actually see the tracks sometimes, or like if they dig something up, you see the tracks.
Like in Lowell?
Like where?
In Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yep, exactly like Lowell. We were in Lowell Justin did a concert there. What was that called, that concert?
AYV.
You got to talk into the mic.
American... AYV.
American Young Voices.
American Young Voices. There you go.
Yeah. So yeah, Justin does singing on the side with a select singers chorus. Anyway, so congratulations on that too, by the way.
Yay.
So yeah, Lowell is full of history, including that history. Anyway, so there was this big train system, right?
Yep.
But and this is going to sound like conspiracy theory. Don't mean it that way. It's just the way this happened to work out. In the late 40s. There was already a car industry developed by like Ford and others, and it had been developed in the 20s and 30s, but there were still tons of trains and tons of trolleys. So the car companies, GM was up and running at that time, General Motors, Ford, and so on, they all got together with like bus companies, tire companies, Goodyear Tire and Rubber, other companies that energy companies that were developing more gas and oil. And this is going to sound conspiratorial, but you can look it up. It's very well documented because it came into a big court case in the Midwest. And they got together and they decided to promote cars as much as they could. And they influenced the government to build a massive road system eventually. This was after what I'm about to talk about, I think a little after. Around 1956, was it? The interstate road system by the Eisenhower administration.
Yep.
Which people think is so great, but actually it really shifted from interstate railroad, transportation, to interstate car and truck. Truck companies were involved in this. So all these companies got together, and they went around, I think it was before this was built, the interstate roads, and to buy up railroads and to buy up trolleys, especially in the inner cities, to force people to take cars in between cities, but also more so even within cities to take cars, use car transportation. And that just changed drastically cities, like, profoundly. And by the way, after that, in the 60s, like, you should see Boston between like 1930 or 40s and fast forward into the late 50s, and the city has been completely destroyed in a lot of ways by this massive shift to cars. So anyway, these people got what they wanted. They went around, they bought up trolleys and trains, and successfully, because they had so much money. And sometimes they would plow them under literally overnight. Like, one day you'd be going to the trolley, next day you'd have to get on the bus because there's no more trolley. It's owned, and it's
also been plowed. There weren't that many buses either.
There were. Though they brought them in real quick.
No, but like nowadays, buses are...
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. How crappy transportation is now is a result of a lot of this. You're right. And where they were most successful is where their unions were weak or there were no unions. Correct. So L.A., which is considered the epitome of a gridlocked, car-based, truck-based transportation system, used to have a brilliant railroad and a brilliant trolley system back in, believe it or not, in the 20s and 30s. And by the late 40s, early 50s, they were plowing that under in the way I'm just describing. Yeah. But the unions were weaker out there. They went around the South, easy pickings. Northwest got rid of a lot. They had trouble in the Northeast. They did get rid of the trolleys pretty effectively. Technological innovation, blah, blah. But it was really a concerted effort. But they had trouble getting rid of the subway systems that had already emerged in New York, Boston, and some other cities.
Wait, they were planning to get rid of the subway systems?
Yeah. That was part of it. Because that's train-based. You know, they couldn't make a big dent in that. They couldn't make a big dent in... Well, they did, actually. They did get rid of the trolleys. But they got resistance, you know, in those areas where the unions were strong. But they were so successful, it just changed everything. And the government, influenced by these big businesses, switched everything over to cars, both locally, nationally, statewide. And this all went to court in, like, I think it was 1949. And a lot of people have written about this. And there's been movies made about it, like documentaries. And they were actually convicted in federal court of conspiracy and monopolization of the transportation system.
And nothing happened to them.
The fine worked out to pennies or a dollar per person involved. It was ridiculous. And they went on, and it profoundly changed things. Now, like I said earlier, capitalism is not a planned system. That sounds like a plan. It was a plan to destroy more than a plan to replace, because in certain places where you lost the train, you never got a bus system in place. You never got, anyway, they got rid of the trolleys, you never got anything in to replace it. They just said people were going to start needing to take cars. They forced cars on the people. There's plenty of places in the country where there is no mass transit or very, very little, and you're forced to have a car. It's very, very expensive. Where we live now, we have to have cars to get around. There's no way around that. So that's an answer to that from a socialist standpoint. What, you want me to start with Trump Care? Oh, Justin's already a producer. He's giving me the signal, keep going, go faster. We always run out of time here. Anyway. Like, you're going to go to Vermont, right? There's
right.
No hope of you going from Worcester to where you're going on train, is there?
No, I know. In fact, they...
Or bus even, probably.
So, it's funny. The school sent out an email because a bunch of the students coming in are international. It's a very small school that I'm going to, the School for International Training Graduate Institute.
Cool.
And they explicitly say in an email that they send out, you know, your closest airport is Boston.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, the closest major airport.
2.5 hours or something?
Yeah.
Three hours almost.
Yeah, and then, you know, from there, you know, most people who are going to be coming in through the airport don't have cars of their own, and they have to take a bus route that's absolutely ridiculous and will take them even more than the 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And is rather pricey. So it's a mess. I'm sure the bus is somehow connected to Keene and then from Keene on, but I mean, I if I had access to the email right now, I could pull it up, but yeah, no, it's not very accessible as far as public transportation.
It must be tiring, too. It's like staying on a bus for such a long time, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's like staying on a plane for a long time, like 19 hours from Hong Kong to New Jersey. Memories.
That's 19 hours? Really?
Yes, that's I did that flight on my way back from Vietnam. That was a great time.
Oh, yeah. I thought about talking about Vietnam, but I wasn't sure how to work it in, because I think I've already asked you anything you could identify as socialist or socialist-influenced movement there when you were there. I think the answer was no.
Weren't there long enough. So it's interesting, right? Because I got to go to so many interesting places. They have the War Museum there,
right,
where they go over French and American imperialist aggressions. You can see a lot of propaganda everywhere, but Ho Chi Minh and the Communist Party of Vietnam were the Stalinists that we've talked about, and I actually got your link that you sent me earlier this week.
Oh, nice.
But I found an article a couple months back that actually very well went over how the Trotskyists got betrayed.
Same article or a different one?
No, I think it was an IMT publication.
Okay.
But it went over La Lutte and that party and the betrayal of the Stalinists in alliance with the French in Vietnam. And it's actually kind of funny. Ho Chi Minh was worried after the end of World War II that China was going to come in, because China had...
Okay.
Vietnam always has this fear of China. China had occupied them for almost 1,000 years back before, you know, the Western world had contact with them.
Yep.
And there's a quote from Ho Chi Minh, and I can't say it. I can't say it exactly on air because it involves some expletives.
Expletives?
Yeah. And
I told Justin no swearing.
Yeah. He said, "I would rather smell French fecal matter for 5 years than Chinese fecal matter for another 100.
Oh, God.
Well, so it would be easier for China to hold a territory like Vietnam in his mind, because China's so big and right on the border with them. France has to have, you know, they have to send their ships. It's a lot more effort for France to hold Vietnam.
Ironically, we were talking about Vietnam, the Vietnam War, before the show, and I don't think we ever talked about it before, and I'm not expecting you to know much about it. Have you talked about it in school at all? Probably not, right?
No. We talked about it in school, like, a few times, but nothing really major. I remember no one really liked it. I remember my teacher saying that. Mm-hmm.
You can push that mic down a little if you want.
I honestly remember. There's nothing much else.
Yeah, so we got into some of the basics, but you were there. That was a cool trip. Yeah. So, I don't know. I didn't know how to work it in. We talked about it a little bit. Anything else we should say about that right now, or
no, I think we can, you know, bring
it's
back
pretty
up.
Much a capitalist economy now, right?
Especially in the starting in 1979, they started dissolving the collective farming, and then in 1986 they established a new policy called Doi Moi, which basically the idea was, I'm going to put this in quotations here, is capitalist market policy towards socialism. So
my sounds like the stagist theory of Stalinism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it sounded like to me. But the Communist Party in Vietnam is full of opportunists, bureaucrats, people who are not going to give up holding on to that market power.
Yeah.
And that really, there's not any hope of moving away from that. And in fact, Xi Jinping, the president of China, recently stated that China now is going to start moving back towards its Marxist roots, which I highly doubt once again.
Nah, that doesn't come from the top.
What does Marxist mean?
Marxist is another word for socialism in a general sense. A guy named Karl Marx started studying what capitalism was like right back at the beginning of capitalism, and had a lot of influence over socialism and socialists, as far as like how to use his writings as a way to analyze things and stuff. So that's what it means, basically. Yeah. Like more like the methodological side or philosophical side of socialism, or one part of socialism. I think it's going to be interesting to see countries like China. I'm using interesting as a mild word.
Right.
China, Vietnam, other countries that Russia itself that were Stalinist or, like in Russia's case, actually socialist for a short time, to see how the inequality coming back through their embrace of capitalism is going to create some sort of socialist movement eventually against it if the planet survives. It's already happening. I mean, there are people we know in China, mostly underground, that are real Marxists and socialists fighting against the system and fighting to spread the ideas of real socialism. Same thing in Russia, too, actually.
Yeah.
Vietnam, I don't know about.
I think I remember when we were talking a few months ago, we have comrades out, I think it was in Belarus where a bunch of them got arrested.
Yep. Also Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan.
I don't know about, I think in Russia, I think we've been harassed a bit. It's hard. And in China, in Hong Kong, there's an above ground group of the Committee for Works International, which Social Alternative is in political solidarity with, and it's called Socialist Action in Hong Kong. And in and you should check out chinaworker.org, I believe, is the website. Very good website.
Yes.
And then in Taiwan, there's a section of the Committee for Works International that is... You turn that back on? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's something else came on. Never mind. That, excuse me. The is above ground, but within China itself, the regime is so repressive that you can't actually talk about real socialism in a regime that calls itself communist still in some ways, which is very ironic. And you have, of course, a certain number of American politicians and Americans that haven't really kept up with what's really happening in China to would say, oh, it's a communist country. Well, no, it's not.
Well, they don't. I think a lot of them know what's going on, but it's very easy to label it communism.
But it's very inaccurate.
Right.
It's basically state capitalist is the closest you could get to any sort of plan, just because the state is so powerful there. But there's still elements of the economy they totally can't control, and they're not, and the capitalists are running wild. You know, and even I'm not. That's not a plug for state capitalism because that's inefficient as well. It doesn't really do anything, but for the people. But anyway. Why don't we switch gears from faraway Asia? I'm just kidding. It's all interlinked to Trump Care, because we said we'd talk about that.
Yes.
So anyone that's been following the news lately, maybe been on vacation, maybe try to avoid it. But Trump Care and the Trump and the Republicans were on the march, trying to do various things all at once. First, get their own type of health care passed, and second, if they couldn't do that, at least destroy Obamacare, or so-called ACA, which is very flawed, by the way, from a socialist standpoint, but we defend it against Trump attacks. Barely better than nothing, but barely better than nothing. Because what's so horrible about ACA is that it enshrined a relationship between healthcare providing and private profit through the private insurance companies. There's no reason for the private insurance companies to have their snouts in healthcare at all. And yet they do. And that's what Obama did. He like made more money for the big rich corporations. What Trump wants to do and the Republicans is make even more money for the big rich corporations by linking it to tax policy, linking it to cutting Medicare, which was a government program that existed, and Medicaid, which existed before ACA, before Trump Care. I heard this statistic that blew my mind the other day. Okay. Matthew, I don't know if you heard this last week. Uh-oh. Half of all births in the United States are funded by Medicaid, I think it was. I get the two confused.
I did not hear about that.
That means the level of poverty, that's like a very concrete manifestation of a huge level of poverty in this country. Can you believe that? Half of all births paid for by Medicaid? That's
an astonishing
incredible.
Number.
Yeah, that's truly astonishing, isn't it?
It is, and... It just really goes to show, too, though, the divide in wealth in this country.
Gosh, yes.
This country, more people are consistently getting poorer and poorer.
Right.
And that, I think, is attributable to that statistic.
That's an amazing, yeah. I mean,
speaking of getting, like, poorer and poorer,
yeah.
You know how, like, there's those ads like, you can make a small business and get richer and richer.
Oh, goodness.
You know? It's like, it doesn't work like that.
Nope.
You have to already be rich, honestly. To, like,
nine
start.
Out of ten yeah. small businesses fail.
In the first year.
In the first year.
Yeah.
And what Justin's implicitly talking about there is how do you raise the money, in other words, capital, to start your business?
You already have to have it
because banks don't just give out money, right? If you go to a bank and say, hey, I have a great idea for a small business, give me this money and I'll start it. First of all, they say, what's your idea? And by the way, they can easily steal your idea if it's that good. Secondly, unless you somehow have copyrighted a bunch of stuff already. Secondly, they can, even then they could. Secondly, they give money to what they think is going to make money. And when they give a loan, they don't want to lose the money. So you have to have what's known as collateral for the loan. Collateral just means already existing wealth that they can seize if you don't pay back your loan. How many people have that already existing wealth? You might, if you're lucky, own a house, but you probably don't. The bank still probably owns it and you're paying a mortgage. You might own a car they could repossess, but that's not enough money for starting a small business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the people getting the loans 99.9% of the time are the people with the connections, personal or whatever, but already have money. Yeah, most important, already have money. Getting back to, anyway, Trump Care, as we said, they were trying to destroy ACA, put in a regressive, even more regressive health care plan that would have cut taxes, cut Medicaid, et cetera, savagely attack Medicaid and health care in general, and transfer wealth to the rich by linking it to tax policies, has collapsed. Now, that happened in stages, but last week it firmly collapsed. You even had the main Republican, Mitch McConnell. Did you hear that speech at all? He's like... he has this weird voice. It's over or something, you know. It was like this admission of defeat. Now the problem is that you can't believe that they're going to come back at this again, probably, most likely.
Oh yeah, they've come back at this. And this is what this was the second attempt, and really it's
at
been
at least yeah.
There's been other plans. I'm sure this is like the third or fourth attempt, and all of a sudden they're just going to keep hacking away, and it sounds President Trump has no intentions of stopping his attacks.
Well, Trump has said openly what he wants to do now, what the Republicans want to do now, is use Trump's executive powers to undermine Obamacare, the state exchanges and all that kind of internal stuff, and help create a collapse of Obamacare. That he's been always threatening. Now, my thing is that there are elements of Obamacare or ACA that could collapse. Trump, though, wants to speed that up as much as possible. But it's still kind of a victory that it failed. But mostly it didn't fail because of a mass movement. The Democrats didn't get out and mobilize a mass movement. And in fact, what I'm hearing from the Democrats is they're praising McCain.
Oh my goodness!
And
yes.
McCain's whole point was, in voting against the Trump Care in its final form, or so-called so far final form, was that McCain said, "We need more. We need to reach across the aisle. We need to do all that kind of bipartisan stuff." So that shows the Democrats are willing to work with Republicans on some sort of further rotten, you know, further de-evolution, further hurting of health care. Like, they're open to actual something they would call reform that would actually hurt health care.
Well, this shouldn't surprise anyone.
No,
right?
No. But still, I mean, they did draw a line in the sand and kept to it about ACA, about Trump Care, but always with another aspects of Trump's policies they've gone along with him. A lot of people don't realize that, the Democrats have. But now with this, they're leaving open the door of some sort of bipartisan attack again, which is really not good. Obviously, but you're right. And especially as socialists, we don't expect anything more from the Democrats.
Yeah.
One thing that happened, even though this wasn't a mass movement in defense of it, there were points of resistance in certain cities and so on, including Socialist Alternative had some sit-ins and some standouts and stuff we did. But there was a lot of anger when the Republicans came back to some town hall meetings, and there was fight back there a little bit, but it was never a coordinated national thing, which the Democrats could have done and didn't. In fact, look what happened in California, which we may have talked about on a previous show, I can't remember, where we were told, we being progressive socialists, etc., were told that, hey, the Bernie-crats, the so-called progressive wing of the Democrats, have taken over the California Democratic Party. This was the announcement within activist circles, right? And the reality was, well, okay, so yeah, so they took over the Democratic Party apparatus, supposedly, right? Then a single-payer bill was introduced, and the Democrats themselves stopped it from going through.
Correct.
So a guy did a procedural maneuver. Yeah.
So the
single-payer means everyone would be under the same health insurance, and it would be a big step forward for everyone getting covered. And so the Democrats looked like they were, the Democrats actually introduced it, or someone introduced it.
Yeah.
But then this Democrats also stopped it.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the party itself was not progressive enough to push through single payer in California, which would have been huge because it's the biggest, one of the biggest states in the country, possibly the biggest economy in the country,
you know what's
statewide.
Sad about that is I didn't hear that anywhere else except here. Like on the radio, you'll not hear that.
You'll hear. There were bits of it, but not the kind of analysis I'm talking about, where supposedly so-called progressives took over the Democratic Party there and then weren't able to push through single payer. And in fact, here's the really sad part. Once this Democrat, named, I think his name was Rendon, did that maneuver with the blessing, of course, of the top leadership of the Democratic Party to stop single payer, there was no outcry. Like Bernie Sanders, who's supposedly this progressive, blah, 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 he didn't say this was a horrible thing and mount a fight against it. What he did was the opposite. He was supposed to introduce single payer to Congress in July.
Yep.
Notice July is just about over here, right? Isn't it over yet? what's today?
July 30th.
Yeah, almost. It's not happening.
Right.
He pulled back and said publicly he was only going to, the best we could do, quote unquote, is defend ACA.
Well, this is the epitome of what the Bernie-crats actually are.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders at one point was a socialist, but
back in the 80s.
We have seen him deteriorate in making deals with the Democratic Party, and we've experienced this kind of struggle within our own organization. We have Shama Sawant, who was elected and reelected to city council.
As an open socialist.
An open socialist, and as soon as she got elected, the Democrats approached her and said, you can't get your way anymore. You're in.
Yeah.
We're going to try it. And we said no.
Yeah.
But Bernie-crats aren't willing to do that.
That was a great story. It's actually on YouTube. For a fundraiser for Ginger Jensen, who we may have time to get into the campaign later, I hope. Shama made a speech recently in Minneapolis at a fundraiser for Ginger Jensen, who's also a socialist, a member of Socialist Alternative. I was out there for this, and I saw this in person. Shama goes, we're trying to get another socialist elected to a major city council in the United States here in Minneapolis, Ginger Jensen, member of Socialist Alternative. And everyone's like, yay. This was a fundraiser thing. And then she goes, you know, when I first got elected in Seattle, two Democrats pulled me aside and said, like Matthew was just saying, they said, okay, you're a big rabble-rouser, but here in this body, we control, meaning the city council, we control things, and you have to go through us. All Shama said was famous last words, because people in the crowd were, she goes, famous last words, because people in the crowd were familiar that we've gotten all this stuff passed, like $50 minimum wage, all this stuff the Democrats didn't want in Seattle. And they got nowhere with that. Because what we do in Seattle is we don't rely on the Democrats. We have to talk to them from time to time, try to get their votes for things. But that's not our main strategy. Our main strategy is to build a mass movement, puts enough pressure on them, they feel like they have to vote for it.
Yep.
And we've done that successfully.
I remember when I was younger, I remember you guys, Socialist Alternative.
Yes.
Needed votes.
Yes.
Like, mm-hmm. I forget the number.
Yes.
I remember you guys like doubled or something, like that number.
Yeah.
I just remember that day when I was younger.
Well, what happened was when Shama first ran, it was very close getting in, and we didn't even think she was going to win. We thought another member of our group was going to win, Ty Moore, out in Minneapolis, and he only lost by a couple hundred, but Shama got in. Then she ran for re-election 3 years later based on some stuff in Seattle that everyone had to run for re-election or decide not to. And I went out there for a week to help campaign. I don't know if you remember that. I was gone. Remember I was gone for a week in Seattle? And this time, and with a lot of other people, I'm not saying I was like a big factor in that. I just did did the grunt work, you know. And so what happened was we won by a much wider margin for the re-election victory. And that was huge. Now, the corporate media didn't cover it as much, but it was huge because it showed it wasn't a fluke. Showed that there was support, major, real grassroots support for socialism, and that we had done a good job with the campaign, so good that the Democratic Party, with 3 years to put up a candidate who they thought was perfect, wasn't. I mean, basically, the candidate they put up was someone that they thought could sway people just based on what she looked like, how she talked, And basically she said, this is true, to Pamela Banks, she said, I agree with everything that Shama says. She said that many times. Shama's the member of social media. And of course she didn't, but she just said that because Shama was so popular. And then, and we gotten so much accomplished that time, the $15 minimum wage and all that. So so our strategy had to be, you know, not just, you know, she just lie and say she supported this or that. We know she didn't really support it. So we said, okay, are you taking corporate money? Because we're not taking corporate money. We don't take any corporate money, and it's true. We don't. As socialists, we don't take any corporate money, no business money when we run for office. In fact, Shama and every member of Social Alternative, every member of the CWI that runs for office anywhere in the world runs on this thing called a worker's wage. I will only take the average wage of the working people in the place I'm running from. So I'm running for. So like if I'm in a district in a city, we'll figure out the average wages of the workers. Uh-huh. That's all I'll take. And invariably, the wage that the city councilors are given is much higher than that. The rest we will donate to social justice movements. Mm-hmm. So Shama did the same thing. Now that's one thing you can guarantee Democrats aren't willing to do. Take a cut in salary and run like that. Yeah. And secondly, they're not willing to. Yes, they want the money. And secondly, they will not say no to corporate money. In fact, in Minneapolis, the main person running against Ginger, who's a member of Social Alternative, Ginger Jensen, is a guy who said, we met with him, and he's this guy supposedly progressive again, blah, blah, whatever that means. This guy said, I will take money from anyone, including corporate money. It won't bother me, blah, blah, blah. Well, it bothers us. It bothers the people. We'll see. I hope it bothers the people, because they're going to have to, August 1st, come out with a thing in Minneapolis saying where all the donations have come from. It's got to be publicly shown. Yep. Ours are going to be like $20 here, $15, $10, $30, whatever. Little, many donations from many different people, because that's how we run. Yeah. That's how we do it. And what's that going to show from that guy is big corporations.
Thousands of dollars.
For the most part. Yeah. Yep. Anyway, a little bit more on Trump Care here. One reason I want to talk about is we want to say to our listeners, don't get complacent. This was not defeated by a mass movement like it should have been. It was defeated by, yes, some very good tactics and anger here or there, but not enough. And they're going to come back at it again one way or another. But one thing good we can say out of that's come out of this, besides that mobilization that did happen a little bit, is that the ACA, or the idea of people being like the government covering people for insurance is more popular now. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you noticed that, but polling data for single payer went up during this approval for single payer. People that were outraged of also, you know, even people that haven't figured anything out politically, they're like, wait a minute, I deserve health care and I want to keep it. And Medicare for all is now polling at 58%. And that's what we're for in Socialist Alternative as a step towards truly socialized medicine. And we have a slogan, healthcare for people, not profit. I think that captures the mood pretty well. And there seems to be wide support for Medicaid. This is a breakthrough in consciousness among working people. We have to understand that's a great thing. Now, unfortunately, the Democrats aren't going to push for single payer or any real steps towards socialized medicine, unfortunately, it looks like. In fact, there was rumors that they wanted Trump Care to pass in a way so they could use it against them in the 2018 elections. Right. Main problem is the Democrats, whether they're really for single payer or not, they're not willing to fight for it, mobilize for it, and they're putting everything in the 2018 elections, which is next year.
Wait, there are elections in 2018?
Well, there are what they call off-presidential year elections that will happen. Due to the cycle of elections, the way they've set it up legally is that every 4 years, House of Representatives comes up for re-election. Every 6 years, senators come up for re-election. And then every 4 years, there's a presidential election. So somewhere in there, you're going to have elections.
Well, representatives are 2 years.
Sorry.
It's okay. Two years and 6 years term for senators.
Sure, it's only 2 years?
Yeah, only 2 years.
Oh, I forgot that. Okay.
That's okay.
That's good, actually. I'm not complaining.
No, neither am I. But, you know, actually, since we're on the subject of focusing on 2018 for the Democrats,
Yeah,
they came out with their agenda, and the slogan is a better deal. You know, hearkening back to the days of the New Deal by FDR or the Square Deal, and yeah, it's
McDonald's Square Deal.
McDonald's,
I think. Wendy's, Burger King, I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. But so the idea is they want job growth, they want better wages, so they're saying, and they are trying to win back a working class base that they've lost touch with in the most recent election.
I read that it did not include single payer.
It did not include single payer, and that's an issue. There's still a lot of... The Democrats think that they can win because we're not Trump. They're still going off of that, and they learn they have to give some concessions, but they're not giving enough. And this is another representation. Everything I've seen on this better deal that isn't NPR or corporate news is saying we need a better deal than this. And in fact, the fact that they call it a better deal, it sounds to me like, well, you guys are desperate, so here's a better option. We don't want a better option. We want the best option.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't read it in detail yet, but I would imagine it does not include public works programs or anything of that nature.
I haven't been able to read it in full.
The New Deal, the only reason people remember it is because based on the mass movement then, and such a left-wing-led mass movement, Communist Party was leading a lot of it, other socialist groups were leading a lot of it, they were forced to do what most people think of that know about the New Deal of the 30s, mass public works programs, meaning the government would hire people to do things like build parks and roads and stuff like that, and even put on theater productions. I mean, it went through the whole range of the economy from so-called blue-collar jobs to white-collar jobs. I don't think that's on the cards for the better deal.
This better deal, one of the platform pieces is they want to increase federal spending for apprenticeship programs.
It's close. It's getting there.
That's getting there. And they want...
They probably want lower pay, though, which was actually a feature, one of the bad features, mm-hmm. obviously, there were a lot of bad features of the New Deal. They created a two-tier wage system, north a certain wage, south a lower wage, both wages very low. So there was that old slogan of the old New Deal, not enough to live on, but too much to die on.
Yeah. Well, and this is a very common thing in a lot of European countries, right? They have these apprenticeship-level wages versus the minimum wage for other workers.
Yeah.
And it really... It makes a lot of these companies say, okay, so I'm going to hire more apprentices and less of the workers for a living wage, because that makes perfect
sense. An apprentice sounds like a nice word. Like, I don't know if you know what it means, Justin. It means you're supposed to learn something, learn a trade or something. But for a private there's a lot of apprentices in the United States where you don't get paid at all. You get paid less, like Matthew's talking about. But what I was going to get to was something else. You don't really get trained for anything. They can call you an apprentice and just use your labor. And you realize, I didn't learn anything that I can use outside of that one stupid company that I was just working for, you know? Like at where I work at Harvard University, they hire students, they hire desperate workers for short-term contracts or short-term times, and they're not learning anything. They're not learning anything useful. They're just plugging stuff into a computer, like I am.
And well, the other two facets that are major that they're working on is limiting corporate mergers. So
that's crap. They won't do that.
Absolutely, they won't do that. And the other thing is they want to lower the cost of prescription drugs.
Yeah, lower when they should be free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is really a backstab. If nothing else.
In a country where a lot of people probably die, they do die. Why am I qualifying? It shows how brainwashed I am. A country where many, many people die because they're trying to avoid higher healthcare costs. They won't take the medicine they're supposed to, or they can't afford it. They don't go to the doctor's office as they should. I don't even go to the doctor's office as I should. This is like a crime. You know, I think the way we have to see healthcare is you're making, in under capitalism, you're making a profit off of sick people.
Yep.
That has to be seen beyond the pale. That has to be seen like the way racism is seen, the way that has to be seen as unacceptable in society. You cannot make profit off of sick people. You try to do that, you go to prison. We don't need sociopaths running around, you know.
Well, and I have a lot of experience with this. I worked the last 3.5 years in fast food.
Right.
I have a coworker who has many times fallen ill, couldn't go to the doctors. my bosses have come close to firing him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he can't afford to go here on the wages you give him. What do you want to do? He doesn't have health insurance. And because he doesn't have health insurance, speaking of the Affordable Care Act, he has to get a tax at the end of the year for not being signed
up. Horrible.
He can't afford any medication. And it's just a vicious cycle.
Yeah. We have one of our regular or semi-regular co-hosts, Diego. He's lost jobs because he has asthma. Sometimes that when there's an asthma attack or the threat of one, it's so bad, he has to take time off. And the places he works for don't have any time off. Here you are in America, and there's no law saying, and there's some cities are enacting laws like this, or some states, maybe, I have to check that. But there's no law, federal law, saying you must get X number of sick days with pay off. Doesn't exist.
I mean, there is sick pay in Massachusetts based off the amount of hours that you work, that you get X amount of hours of sick time that you can use later on. But that's
relatively
minimal.
New, I think, too.
Yes, that was enacted, I think, back in 2016?
Yeah,
2015.
Something like that.
Speaking of the price of medical stuff, right? Like medical, like drugs and like stuff to help you when you get like allergies. There's this girl at my school, right? And she has diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once we were at this park and she lost her like diabetes equipment, and she was freaking out because two of those things rakes up to like $1,000.
Yep.
Right.
Wow.
It's just incredible. Luckily, we found it, but it was just a scary moment for her.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's a life-threatening condition too. So, so many people die needlessly, and it's never like looked at that way. I mean, I often reference, and I hate to do this because Michael Moore is such a tool of the Democrats now. But, you know, that movie Sicko is worth... It's actually his best film so far, better than Capitalism, A Love Story, which is meant ironically, by the way, that title. Michael Moore, back when he did not support the Democrats, made a film called Sicko. And what he did was he looked at people with insurance. Okay, so they already have insurance, but the insurance wouldn't cover a lot of stuff. And the stuff was still too expensive a lot of the time. And he would actually track people that died because of that. And that's part of the film. And that is... No one's like doing that in a big way that I'm aware of. I mean, there's a really good group called Physicians for a National Health Plan that might be doing some work on that. But who's going around saying this person died because of unaffordable medical care?
Yep.
You know, or medical care for profit. I mean, if you think about your own life and people that you knew, often elderly people who you knew weren't getting proper care and they died, that's really what I'm talking about, too. That's
like
part of
murder,
that spectrum. Yeah, it's like murder, exactly.
Yeah.
That's part of that spectrum. I know it's probably not the best story I could come up with, but just for some reason, it's in my head a lot. I had a friend whose aunt, I believe, or maybe grandmother was older. I think it was aunt. But she was taking care of her a lot, helping take care of her. And she went to the hospital from a nursing home because she got sick in the nursing home. The nursing home didn't want to take care of her. They sent her to a local hospital. This is in the Boston area, and died like on a gurney in a hallway. Cause of death? Pneumonia. That really? Was it? And we knew it wasn't that serious, but she died in the hospital through lack of care.
Yep.
I'm not blaming nurses or anything. I'm saying the hospitals are set up as profit-making institutions. So that's just one example out of zillions, millions, hundreds, tens of millions of murder really happening in the United States based on class, based on capitalism, social class. You're poor, you're working class, you got a much greater chance of dying from not being able to get the health care you need when you need it, including prescriptions.
That's why we say capitalism is violence.
It is. It's extremely violent system. Every minute it exists. It exists on coercion. It exists on exploitation of people's work and of nature, of the ecology and the environment. And it's a coercive, very coercive system. Like if you stop working, look at all the stuff that's going to come down on you.
Yep.
You stop working, you don't have any money. You can't afford food. Oh, but there's a lot of food in that grocery store they're never going to sell. They're just going to waste. I think I'll go into the store and eat something. And try that. They call the cops. You end up in prison. You know, oh, I don't have a house to live because I don't have any money. But there's all these empty apartments and houses and empty commercial buildings. I'll do quite well in a corner. And I'll sleep in a tent in a corner of that abandoned factory that's been there for 20 years and hook up some water and I'll have a shower every morning and then I'll go try to find a job. Try to do that, get arrested, sent to prison.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's all about protecting not just private property, but protecting the private exploitation of labor and people's lives. It's really, you know, it's really, really hard to escape the system. And when you do, you're leading a diminished life, probably outside of society in many, many ways in terms of contact with people and so on. And anyway, I don't want to get too philosophical about it, but it just gets, it's a system based on coercion, basically, yeah. Definitely.
It's really sad that, like, the rich get to live longer,
yep.
Even though the poor or, like, the...